There it is, an echo of the past, an exciting past, a romantic past, the era of the horse and carriage, gas-lit streets and free-for-all football games, the era of one of the most beloved figures in American fiction, Frank Merriwell. Merriwell is loved as much today as everyone. And so the National Broadcasting Company brings him to radio in a new series of stories based on the famous books written by Gilbert Patton under the pen name Bert L. Standish. Today, The Mystery Man. The scholastic year at Yale is drawing to a close. As our story opens today, we find Frank and Bart with a group of several other high-average pre-law students gathered in a classroom in Welch Hall, where Professor Stafford is about to address him.
What's this special meeting all about, Frank? I just heard of it from Jack Diamond.
Well, Professor Stafford is going to announce the terms of that law scholarship contest.
Oh, that. I wish Jack had told me. I'm not interested in that scholarship for next year.
Well, I am. In fact, getting the scholarship means I can come back to school next year.
What's this? I didn't know there was any doubt about you coming back to law school, Frank.
Oh, yes, Bart. My guardian wrote me and said I've got to find some way to get a scholarship or I can't go after my law degree.
Oh, that's a shame. I wish you'd told me. Dad would be glad to lend you the money to finish up.
Bart. That's exactly why I hadn't mentioned it before.
Frank, I don't know.
Don't worry. There's a scholarship available and I'm going to win it or know the reason why.
Sure you will, Frank. I'm going to stick around and see what it is you have to do to win.
Well, you won't have long to wait. Looks like Professor Stafford's ready to give us the details now.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, your attention, if you please.
We'll have some tough competition, though. All the best pre-law students seem to be here.
Thank you. Now, gentlemen, I want to take as little of your time as possible, so I will appreciate your undivided attention. As you know, you have gathered here to listen to the rules for the competition to determine which of you is to receive the Willard B. Johnson Law Scholarship for next year.
That is what it is.
The rules are simplicity itself. All of you with A averages in pre-law are eligible. Each one of you will be assigned to an actual law case which has been tried in court. You will notice that each case has resulted in a conviction on circumstantial evidence. It is up to you to study the case, rebrief it, and point out, if possible, steps which might have been taken by the defense to produce a favorable verdict. Is that quite clear?
Hey, this sounds interesting.
Yes.
I'm sorry, no, I'm not going to try for it.
Now then, the winning brief will be decided by the scholarship committee solely on the basis of the original approach and the soundness of the legal thinking. Briefs must be handed in to me at my office by 1 week from today, at which time the contest is closed. Now then, are there any questions?
Oh, Professor Stafford.
Yes, Mr. Merriwell.
Professor Stafford, how soon do we receive our assignment?
Right now, Mr. Merriwell. In fact, I have your case here in my hand at the moment. You will look into a case labeled The People of the State of Connecticut against David Randall.
Thank you, sir.
It's a case involving grand larceny, and it should prove most interesting. Incidentally, the decision was rendered only 3 years ago, so you've had a little trouble completing the necessary research.
May I go to work on it at once, sir?
I strongly recommend that you do. You will find the assignment entails a good deal of work, and you will need all the time you can get. And now let me see. Here's the next assignment.
So where are you going, Frank?
I'm taking the professor at his word. He said to start on this at once, and that's just what I'm going to do.
Hi, Frank.
I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's all right, Bart. Here, I ordered this lime phosphate for you.
Oh, fine. Well, how's the research coming?
Oh, pretty good so far, Bart. I spent practically a whole day in the law library studying that Randall case.
Oh, did you find out anything interesting?
Quite a lot. It's a fascinating case. As Professor Stafford said, it's all built on circumstantial evidence.
Well, did you dig up any new angles that might throw a different light on it?
Well, not so far. That's why I'm going over to call on old Judge Martin.
Judge Martin?
Uh-huh.
Oh, was he presiding at that trial? I thought he was retired.
Well, he is now. That was one of his last cases.
Oh, well, he ought to be able to help you. He's a nice old fellow.
Oh, I hope so. Lord knows I need the help.
I wish I could do something. I sort of feel left out of things.
Well, then, why don't you come along with me to the judge's house? That is, if you haven't anything better to do.
Anything better to do? When winning this scholarship means you can come back to Yale next year? Come on, let's see Judge Martin right now.
The Randall case. Why, of course, Mr. Merriwell. I remember it very well. Sit down, won't you?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Well, I'd be glad to help you now in any way that I can. Well,
thanks a lot, Judge Martin. I hated to bother you, but this scholarship means a great deal to me.
So I understand. And I'll do anything I can, I assure you. Just what is it you wanted to know?
Well, first, let me be sure I have the facts straight, sir. Now, David Randall was an accountant for the John Kingston firm here in New Haven. Huh?
That's right. But more than a mere accountant, he was probably Kingston's most trusted employee.
Kingston? I'm beginning to remember this case myself. Isn't old man Kingston dead?
Yes, Mr. Hodge, he is. The old man died at the time of the robbery.
Sure, sure, I remember it now. This Randall fella stole $5,000 from Mr. Kingston, wasn't that it?
That was the contention of the prosecution. Strangely, the robbery occurred on the very night Mr. Kingston was killed in a traffic accident in New York City.
Uh-huh.
The safe here in New Haven was opened and the $5,000 stolen. The police established beyond any doubt that the death of Mr. Kingston was a pure and simple accident, in no way connected with the theft. That is why the prosecutor had to content himself with a grand larceny indictment.
I see, and Randall was convicted of stealing the money.
Yes. The jury was most impressed by the case of the prosecution. It seemed quite airtight.
Seemed, sir? You mean there was doubt in your mind?
Well, after all, it was purely circumstantial. With a better defense attorney, the accused might have been acquitted for lack of more positive evidence.
Well, how about Randall, sir? Is he in jail now?
No. No, I gave him a suspended sentence when he promised to pay the $5,000 to the Kingston firm.
Oh, he made a promise like that, sir?
Yes, he did.
Why, that's as much as admitting his guilt.
I suppose it is. Although, frankly, I could never shake off an uneasy feeling that perhaps he was innocent, as he claimed.
Oh, I see, sir.
Look here, boys. Why don't you talk to the man yourselves?
Well, could we do that, sir? Is he still around New Haven?
Yes, indeed. He's living in a small shack down near the railroad.
But do you have the address, sir?
I do, and I'll write it down for you. Well,
thanks a lot, Judge. You know, the more I find out about this case, the more it interests me. There isn't much time, but I'm going to do my best to get to the bottom of it.
I'm afraid this isn't much of a place, gentlemen, but make yourselves as comfortable as you can. Well,
thanks very much, Mr. Randall.
Sorry to bother you, sir, so late in the evening. What's on your mind?
Well, it's about that Kingston affair.
Oh, so that's it. Haven't I been hounded enough already?
Well, sir, you...
Look here, boys. I swear to you I never stole a penny in my life.
Well, then why did you offer to pay back the $5,000?
I had to. It was the only way I could get a suspended sentence. You think I wanted to spend the next 5 years rotting in a prison cell?
But this way you've convicted yourself in the eyes of the public. Everyone believes you stole the money.
Don't you think I know that? It follows me everywhere I go. But my conscience is clear, and that's the important thing. That's why I can stay right here in New Haven and look anyone in the eye. Oh, well, I wouldn't expect you to understand that.
As a matter of fact, sir, I do understand it. That's one thing that makes me think you're telling the truth. But if we're going to help you, you'll have to help us.
Well,
will you do it?
What do you want with me?
Well, just tell us everything you know about the case.
All right. Mr. Kingston and I were the only two people in the world who knew the combination of the office safe.
I see.
When he left the office that last night to go to New York, the money was in there. The next day, he was dead. And the money was gone. Naturally, everyone thinks I took it.
You're sure that no one else knew the combination?
Absolutely positive. There wasn't anyone else, not a soul. I had to tell the truth, didn't I?
Yes, I suppose you did. Now, there's only one possible explanation. Mr. Kingston opened the safe himself.
Oh, I know. My attorney tried to show that, but it was no use. The money was never found in Mr. Kingston's effect.
Well, that doesn't prove anything. He might have given it to someone or had it stolen from him.
Oh, fine chance we'd have of proving that after all this time.
Well, why did Mr. Kingston go to New York that night, do you know?
Not for certain, but I've always had a feeling it had something to do with Red Price.
Red Price?
Well, who's that? The name sounds familiar.
Well, you must have seen him box. He was a local fighter around New Haven about that time. You see, most people didn't know it, but Mr. Kingston was an avid fight fan.
And what makes you think his trip had something to do with this fighter?
Because I saw them together going toward the railroad station that night.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Well, why didn't you mention this before and have Red Price brought into court for testimony?
It wasn't any use. Red Price disappeared about that time and was never heard of again.
What's that? And you have no idea what happened to him?
None. He simply vanished.
Frank, if you ask me, this fellow Price is the key to the whole case.
He might very well be. Can you describe him, Mr. Randall?
Not very well, I'm afraid. He was a tall man. Weighed about 190 pounds, I think.
With red hair, I suppose.
No, that's the odd part. He had black hair. He got his nickname because of a very red complexion.
Hey, wait a second. I think I remember him, Frank. We saw him fight once when we were freshmen. Didn't he have a peculiar way of clubbing with his left hand?
Yes, I believe he did. I remember Mr. Kingston speaking of that. Called it a bolo punch, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much about boxing.
Oh, of course, I remember him, too. Say, a fighter with a punch like that shouldn't be hard to find. That seems very strange that he should have disappeared.
Hey, Frank, there's a fight card at the New Haven Arena tomorrow night.
Sure. Bart and I will go there and question every manager and handler we can find. If Red Price isn't out of boxing altogether by this time, we'll find him.
I certainly wish you luck, gentlemen, and, well, I don't know how to thank you.
Well, don't try. If we can help you on this case at all, I'll be the one who'll do the thanking.
We certainly got nowhere here at the arena. Not a single manager we talked to could tell us anything about Red Price.
That's a funny thing, Bart. As I said before, a fighter with all that promise wouldn't just drop out of sight by accident.
I know. Unless he deliberately went into hiding.
Exactly. Which makes me more anxious than ever to find him. I'm sure now that he's the key to this whole case.
The winner, Thompson!
Well, we've done all we can here. We might as well go.
I suppose so. Still early, though. Let's watch this next bout. According to the card, it's between two heavyweights.
All right, sure.
Their next attraction for this evening, a six-round heavyweight match in this corner from Bridgeport, Connecticut, wearing black trunks and weighing 202 and one half pounds, Charles Williams.
Well, it'll probably be a pretty dull fight.
Maybe. Who's this other fellow?
Worthy opponent, the sensational fighter from down under in Melbourne, Australia, wearing purple trunks and weighing 196 pounds, Bush Sidney.
Yeah, I like the look of that Australian fighter. I'll bet you he wins, Frank.
No, thanks. He looks like the better fighter than me, too.
So here they go.
Look at that footwork. Oh, that Bridgeport boy better get in close. Look at the way Sidney jabs with that left.
But he can't get in close. He ought to keep moving back.
Look out!
Oh, did you see that punch? Oh, Williams will never get up after that.
Oh, it's a knockout, all right.
Oh, what a punch that was. Caught that Bridgeport boy on the side of the jaw before he knew what hit him.
Something about that. Gee, Bart, remember that so-called bolo punch of Red Price's?
Hey, come to think of it, that one did remind me of the way Price used to hit.
I thought there was something familiar about that Bush Sidney.
Gee, wait a minute. You don't think that...
I don't know what to think. But come on, we're going back to the dressing room.
Well, this must be his dressing room right up here, Frank.
Yes, I guess so.
Hey, off a minute, you two. Where are you going?
We're looking for Bush Sidney's dressing room.
Well, that's it, boys, but you can't go in now.
But we've got to see him.
Well, what's it about? Come on, you can tell me. I'm Charlie Luther, Bush's manager.
Well, to tell you the truth, we're looking for a fighter by the name of Red Price who used to fight around here.
Price? What's that got to do with my boy?
Well, that's what we want to find out. Your fighter uses a style exactly like Price's.
And what's more, he looks a lot like him, too.
Now, wait a minute, gents. You're mistaken. This boy comes from Australia. This is the first time in the States. Well, he's never even heard of this Red Price, neither have I.
Well, just the same, we'd like to talk to him about it.
All right. I'll tell you what I'll do. Bush is scheduled to go to a lunch at the AC tomorrow noon. Now, if you chefs come over there, I'll see that you meet him and have your talk. That suits you?
Well, I don't see why we can't see him now.
Well, it's tomorrow at the AC or never. Make up your mind.
Oh, it's all right, Bart. I guess we can afford to wait until noon tomorrow.
All right. But don't forget, you haven't got too much time left.
I have enough. Thanks, Mr. Luther. See you tomorrow. Come on,
Bart. All right, good night.
Hi, Charlie. Be dressed in a second.
Hi, Red. Red, get your stuff packed. We're taking a 10 o'clock train to New York.
Tonight? You're kidding.
This is no joke, believe me. We're getting out of New Haven right now. We should never have come back in the first place.
Well, why? What's wrong?
Somebody recognized you.
What?
Two chaps from the college were just outside the passage asking to see you.
I don't know anybody at the college. Just for anybody recognizing me, I doubt it. Why, since I busted my nose, my own brother wouldn't know me if I'm
not. Maybe not, but these blokes think you're Red Price.
What?
And if they get to see you close up, our whole plan is ruined. Now, listen, we spent a lot of money changing you into an Australian. And if they find out you're just Red Price from New Haven, we're ruined. And you understand that much, don't you?
Sure, sure, Charlie.
Then do as I say. Get packed.
What about the lunch at the AC tomorrow?
I'll fix that. We should never have come here to New Haven in the first place. So we're getting out right now. And we're not coming back until you're the champion of the world. Now, get along with you.
That's about the dirtiest trick I ever heard of, Frank. The manager promised us that we'd meet his spider at the lunch, and then he never shows up.
Well, I'm not surprised, Bart. He looked pretty startled last night when we mentioned the name Red Price.
You think that Red Price and Bush Sidney are one and the same man, don't you?
No doubt about it now, Bart. That's the reason they left town in such a hurry.
Well, then, that's practically all we need to know. Red Price was the man who stole the money. Randall is innocent, after all.
It's not that simple, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's right. How could Price have taken the money?
Exactly, boy. Now, Randall and old man Kingston were the only ones who could open the safe.
Yeah. Well, then, how do you explain it?
I don't. But we've got to find Price and get him to do some talking.
But we can't do that. He's left town.
Well, he went to New York. While you were waiting for me in the dining room back at the AC, I was doing a little questioning.
Oh?
The two men caught the 10 o'clock train right after we talked to the manager last night.
That means they were running away from us. Now, what are we going to do about it, Frank?
I'll tell you. I'm going to New York after them.
What? You're crazy. You can't do that.
Don't worry. I'm going to return the carriage to Inza and get the dean's permission.
But what about your briefs for the contest? So far, you haven't written down a single word. All you've been doing is chasing down that fighter.
I can't help it, Bart. I'll worry about the briefs later. It's more important to go to New York and find Price. I've got a chance to clear Randall, and I'm not going to pass it up.
All right, then. Let's go get permission from the dean.
Hey, wait a second. You don't have to make the trip with me.
I know I don't. The way you insist on walking into trouble, you're going to need some help. And I'm in.
Thanks, Bart. Giddy up, Sally.
What can I do for you, boys?
Well, as sports editor for the Globe, we thought you could tell us where to find a fight manager named Luther who manages Bush Sidney.
Oh, yes, Charlie Luther. I see. I have it here in my desk someplace. Small hotel down 23rd Street.
Charles Luther?
Oh, yes, sir. He and Mr. Sidney are registered here, but you won't find them in.
Where are they, do you know?
Yes, Mr. Sidney said that if there were any messages, he could be reached at the Avon Gymnasium, two blocks across town on 8th Avenue.
The Avon Gym, thank you. Come on, Bart, we're getting warm.
Hey, Red.
Just a second, Charlie. I want to finish.
Red, that's enough of that. Listen to me.
All right, what's wrong now?
Plenty. See those two just came in across the gym?
What about them?
Those are the two blokes who were looking for you last night. They must have followed us down here to New York.
What do they want with me, anyhow?
No, but it's too late to duck out now. They see you.
Yeah, they're heading over this way.
Now, listen to me. They'll ask you questions. Now, don't answer any. I don't care how you handle them, but don't answer any questions.
Okay, I'll take care of them. Don't worry.
And mind the way you talk. You know, you're supposed to be Australian, you know?
Don't worry, old boy. I'll make a proper impression.
Righto, Bush.
Just a moment, Mr. Luther.
Yeah, what?
Oh, it's you chaps again.
We had a date for lunch today, and you walked out on it.
I didn't have any engagement with you. I only said you might meet my boy if you went to that lunch.
You got him out of town in a hurry. What's the idea?
I'm second you two. You can't talk to my manager like that.
It's all right, Red. We just wanted him to answer a few questions.
Red? Where did you get that name? I'm Bush Sidney.
Oh, sure, we know. From Australia.
Now, look here. I don't like your attitude.
get on with
you. Don't let him push you like that, Red.
You're on what I said.
Get moving now.
Take it easy, Red.
I said my
I name. Know you'd like to start a fight and have us thrown out of this gym, but it won't work. We want to talk to you.
Just like I thought. You're afraid of me. You're afraid to fight. How are you going to let him get away with that, Frank? If that's the way he feels, I'll take him on myself.
Relax, Bart. They'd like nothing better than to get us in a fight and have us thrown out. It's the only way they can avoid our question.
You're crazy. Now get out.
If you want to fight so badly, I'll give it to you. But in the ring, wearing gloves.
What? Did you hear that, Charlie? I think this bloke's really soft in the head.
We'll see. How about it, Red?
Why, you... All right. Shall I give him a lesson, Charlie?
Why not? You need the workout, and he should be as good as the punchy bag. For a few seconds, anyway. All right, come on, mister. Get a pair of gloves on. Your bluff is called.
Maybe you shouldn't have done this, Frank. Look, practically everyone in the gym has come over here to watch.
All the better for us, Bart. I want an audience to see this.
Well, you better watch your step. He looks pretty mean over there across the ring.
I think I know how to handle it.
You better watch out for that bolo punch of his.
I hope he tries it. I think I know a way of hooking a left inside of it that might surprise you.
I sure hope
so. All right, you two, you ready?
Anytime you are.
Well, then come out here in the middle of the ring and shake hands. I'll referee.
You referee? Oh, no.
It's all right, Bart. Let him.
Well, remember this, Luther. While you're watching the fighters, I'll be watching you.
Stop beating. You'll get a square deal. All right, come on, Bush.
I'm ready.
All right, now I'll time you. 3 minutes. And both of you defend yourselves at all times. All right, now get ready to fight and shake hands.
Don't worry, lad. You won't have to go the old 3 minutes.
I don't intend to.
I stop talking and fight. Time.
Pretty fancy buck, the ancient.
Better save your breath, Red. He hasn't landed yet.
No.
Well, I will this time.
Now, watch that twitching. Break it up.
You heard him, Red. Break. Let go of my arm.
What's the matter? He's just making you look bad.
He won't for long.
Stop playing. Let him have it. Put him away.
You bet I will.
Look out, Frank. Watch out for the ball. Here it comes.
No, you don't.
Oh. Hey, my spider. What happened?
He walked into one, that's all. Come on, I'll help him up.
Hey, what have you got in that glove?
Just a left hook. You were wide open for it. Now, easy. Your legs are wobbly.
What's the idea? You've ruined us.
Not quite, Mr. Luther. But we could if this story got into the papers. Now, what do you say? Are you ready to talk to us?
All right, mister. You win. But not here. Come on back to the locker room where we can be alone. No one will bother us in here.
All right. What do you chaps want with me?
Well, first, we want you to admit you're Red Price.
And while you're at it, drop that Australian accent.
Now, look here, I told you...
It's no use, Charlie. They got us over a barrel. Sure, I'm Red Price. What of it?
Well, that's better. Now, there's still one big question you've got to answer. On the very day Mr. Kingston died, $5,000 was stolen from his safe in New Haven.
What's that?
Stolen?
Don't pretend you didn't know about it.
Well, of course I didn't. Well, that is, I knew about the 5,000, but
hey,
I didn't...
Wait, shut up.
Well, never mind, Charlie. This is my affair.
Now, just a second, lad. If you've been mixed up with anything shady, I don't want any part of it.
There wasn't anything wrong with what I did.
Are you trying to say you took that $5,000 from Mr. Kingston?
Why, in a way, but you've got to listen to my story. I took the money, but with his permission.
You expect us to believe that?
It's true, I swear it is. Mr. Kingston was a great fight fan, and he was a sort of a secret backer of mine back there.
Secret backer?
He didn't want anyone to know about it because of his business, but he used to give me money so that I could keep on fighting. Well, that night you're talking about, I met him at the railroad depot. He was carrying a suitcase, and he was waiting for the New York train.
Oh, good evening, Red.
Mr. Kingston, I got to talk to you.
Well, I'm waiting to catch the New York train, Red. It'll have to be fast.
Oh, it's about that offer for the foreign exhibition tour.
Yeah?
See, they told me I got to post a $5,000 bond by tomorrow.
$5,000,
eh? Yeah.
We won't let a little thing like that interfere with your trip.
But, sir, I can't dig up that kind of money.
Oh, though. Nonsense. You'll make much more than that from the tour. I wish I had more time. Tomorrow, you say, eh?
That's right, sir.
Well, of course, the banks are closed now, and I won't be back here for 3 or 4 days.
Oh.
I'll tell you what I'll do, though, Red. Here, let me jot this down for you.
What's that, Mr. Kingston?
It's a combination of my office safe.
Oh.
And here's the key to the office. You go there, open the safe, and take the cash.
Suppose somebody's there.
Oh, good heavens, here's my train. My chief accountant, Mr. Randall, might be there. I'll give you a note for him. If he is, you just give him this note, and he'll give you the money. Not just open the safe yourself and take it. I'll tell Randall all about it when I return from New York. Now, here you are, the note, the key, and the combination. Take him and take your money. Oh, here comes my...
And that's just what happened. I got the money from the safe I left on the World Exhibition Tour. I never heard anything about Mr. Kingston's death until I got back here to the safe.
That's a pretty thin story.
And how does this manager of yours fit into the picture?
Well, I met the kid in Australia and decided to make him the champion of the world. And to get publicity, I hit on the dodge of selling him as a mysterious Australian heavyweight.
He's working, too. Everywhere we go, we draw big crowds.
Then you didn't know anything about Randall being accused of stealing that $5,000?
What? Randall? Oh, no, of course I didn't. If I had, I'd have spoken up right away.
Well, he's not only accused of it, he was convicted of it. That's why I'm trying to clear him. Now, have you any proof of what you just told me?
Sure I have. I've got the note Mr. Kingston wrote, and I've also got the combination of the safe. They're back in the hotel room.
Well, I'll be... This would clear Randall for sure.
Now, just a minute, boys. We can't let you bring this story out in the open. Why, it'd ruin our whole build-up for Red.
I'm sorry, but that can't be helped.
Now, look here. We'll send the money back anonymously, but we won't tell that story.
I'm sorry, but you'll have to. It's the only way to free Randall.
Well, I'd like to know how you're going to make us.
Very well, then. If you don't want to cooperate, we'll go to the newspapers with a little story of our bout just now.
Yeah, they're right, Charlie. You've got to do as they say. Besides, it's the only decent thing to do. We're going back to New Haven and tell the whole story.
Now you're talking sense. Come on, we'll go along with you.
This is extraordinary. If it weren't all down in black and white, I'd scarcely believe it.
Well, that's the whole story, Judge Martin, and Red Price will swear to it all in court.
Well,
yes, sir, I'm ready to tell the whole business just as I told it to Mr. Merriwell.
Then I'm free. Everyone will believe me now.
Yes, Mr. Randall, everyone must believe you now. Of course, there are certain formalities before your name can be completely cleared, but I promise you I'll set the machinery in motion at once.
Thank you, Judge Martin.
Don't thank me, sir. Thank Mr. Merriwell here. It was due entirely to his diligence and interest in your case. And by the way, young man...
Yes, sir?
With such a remarkable feat, I rather imagine it's a foregone conclusion that you'll win the law scholarship.
Well, no, sir. I'm afraid I haven't any chance of that now.
No chance?
What? Why on earth not?
Well... You see, I spent so much time tracking down the facts in this case, I had no time left to prepare my brief. And as much as coming back to Yale meant to me, Mr. Randall's entire future is a lot more important.
Well, that's true, Frank, but Yale isn't going to be the same without you.
Gentlemen, your attention, please.
Boy, here we go. Whoever gets this doesn't deserve it. I bet you did more real work than any of them.
Quiet, here comes the announcement.
The scholarship committee has studied all the submitted briefs with the utmost care. The winner, according to the terms of the contest, is Mr. Jack Diamond.
Jack Diamond?
Let's go over and congratulate him.
Just a minute, gentlemen. Please, no demonstration. Quiet, if you please.
Oh, wait. Professor Stafford has another announcement.
I have also to ask... I've been asked to announce a very special award being made this year for the first time.
Special award? What's this?
I don't know, Bartlett.
A distinguished jurist and alumnus of the university has set up a special endowment fund today to enable a person designated by him as an outstanding young student of the law to return to his studies next year. And so, in accordance with the wishes of Judge Martin... I am pleased to announce a fully paid scholarship award to Mr. Frank Merriwell.
Frank, did you hear that, Judge Martin?
Did I hear it? It means I can come back to Yale next year after all.
What a break. This is one time Yale really wins.
And so ends another exciting adventure with Frank Merriwell, beloved hero of American fiction, brought to you in a new series of stories by the National Broadcasting Company. Be sure to listen again next week at the same time when Frank Merriwell returns in another of his celebrated exploits. Frank is played by Lawson Zerbe, Bart as Hal Studer. The Adventures of Frank Merriwell is written by Ruth and Gilbert Braun, and the entire production is under the direction of Ed King. This is Mel Brand speaking.